October, I hear.
How's that? Call the Resources Committee meeting to order. Representative Fanning, Sutcliffe, and Barnes are present. Well, we have before us House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 768. At some point, when we get a quorum, we will, I would entertain a motion to adopt House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 768, amended resources. Chairman, I would so move. Let the record show that Representative Halpern has joined us. So the motion is to adopt House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 768, resources. Any objections? Hearing no objections, we have before us House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill Number 768. An act providing for fishery product loan guarantees and providing for an effective date. I think all of us are aware that the bill is before us to try to do what the state can to help alleviate some of the problems associated with the salmon crisis. Due to the time, I think it'd be appropriate that we take public testimony, and I don't know who signed up. Hopefully all those that have signed up have had time to read the bill, and for timeliness, I would appreciate that the testimony be kept as short as possible. Marcia, did you, she's no longer here, I don't see you, Marcia. Well, these are kind of for the, who is here to testify for 768? Yeah. Okay. Okay, Anselm, do you want to start off and just identify yourself for the record, and since you've been involved in the bill from the very beginning? Representative Grusendorf, for the record, has joined us. Terry, why don't you come up? Let the record note also that Representative Gardner has joined us.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Anselm Stock. I'm Comptroller for the Treasury for the Alaska Department of Revenue. What I can do is simply explain to you what the latest version of the bill does, if you desire, or simply answer questions on it. Would you like me to?
Rather than my walk everybody through it, I just seen somebody else do it, so I have at it. And then.
Okay. I think that the letter that the committee has put out explained the bill. It fairly, you know, characterizes what the bill does. There's a letter attached. I would bring out, I think, some points that need consideration. I'd say the most important facet of the 1982 program is that in this particular bill, it provides for a 50% guarantee for the 1982 program of the loan. Instead of, as in past years, just Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank being involved, it can be Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank or other financial institutions, which means both in-state as well as outside of the state if they get involved in financing. However, there are certain limitations on that. No borrower may have more than a $10 million guarantee, which means that no borrower could have a loan greater than that would be subject to guarantee of $20 million. There are certain terms and conditions that simply make the term of the loan doesn't exceed 1 year. There would have to be, of necessity, some administrative determination as to whether or not that particular condition might, if there is, for instance, an event of default, or the person couldn't pay off the loan within a year, whether or not this might force a default situation or not, but that can, wording to that effect can be handled administratively so that it tracks. It does provide that not less for a period from whenever this bill passes to July 1 of 1982, 20% of the money in the fund would be reserved for use by loans originated by Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank or an Alaska financial institution. After that time period from July 1 until December 31, other financial institutions can go, they can immediately come in for the 80% portion, but whatever isn't used in the first 20% portion would then be open to them. But also, after January 1, 1983, the program would again be restricted to Alaska financial institutions or Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank. It is restricted to fishery product being defined as salmon. And also a very important point, the 20% restricted portion during the time period for Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank and Alaska Financial Institution is also for financing those people that are more than 51% owned Alaska firms for that period of time. As to the 1981 program, the Section 6 of the bill, 5 and 6, address the current existing loan guarantee program that is from 1981. It increases the guarantee from the current effective 40% of the total loan to 70% of the total loan, which also includes the Commercial Fishing and Ag Bank portion. It is also provided that guarantee can go up to 70% for those people who, where it involves canned salmon and where they do show action that they will fish in the 1982, that they will be involved in the 1982 harvest, and that the financial institution certifies that they in fact will participate. The way the present guarantee program is written,
just a quick example, is that if you have a $10 million loan, this is for the 1981, if you have a $10 million loan, and the highest balance was $10 million, and whole loan went into default, i.e. there was no recovery on collateral, then the state would be involved in paying $7 million. However, suppose, for example, $1 million was left after the loan was paid off down to a $1 million level, then the state would pick up $700,000. The present guarantee document tracks the amount then outstanding, or the sum in default, meaning it is not to whatever the highest balance was, it tracks the amount outstanding of the loan. There, in the past, this is not addressed in the bill specifically. I know it has come up in many, many discussions. In the past, there has been a factor of interest used on the guarantee portion. That has not, just as a matter of course and as a business practice, I would presume that we would stop using that practice, because it effectively lowers the amount of guarantee. Of money available for guarantees. If the committee desires that we use an interest rate factor, then we feel that that should be stated, that we allow that so that we straighten out that point. I would also say that as to the section on the condition of loan guarantees contained on page 2, that says that the department, going down to section 4592.050B, which starts on line 17 of page 2, which makes the amount of the guarantee 50% of the loan, but no more than $10 million per borrower. It stipulates that the maximum liability of the fund for a loan guarantee under this chapter shall be the percentage of the sum in default specified by the department in the guarantee agreement. That can be interpreted two ways. I presume that what that will mean, since it says the maximum liability shall be the percentage of the sum in default, the way that term is written would be that if there were $1 million of the loan in default, then 70% of it would, 50% of it would be covered. There always is a percentage of loss. And
sure. Again, if I can interrupt you, that I thought at first you said 70%, now well, 50, I don't understand.
Okay, I was two different things. Going back to the 1981 program, the current program in existence for which there are loan guarantees, this bill takes the 1981 program and says that if you're going to operate in 1982 and you already have an existing loan guarantee, okay, where we already have an existing guarantee, that we will take that guarantee up to 70% on those loans, on the old 81 loans.
That's what the current program says.
Well, the current program says it effectively comes out to 40% of the loan. This is raising the...
Where does this do that?
This does it on page 4 of the bill, starting lines 1 through 24.
This is just can perceive that CFAB has, you know, effectively a 40% guarantee on their money now. They have spoken to the fact that they cannot carry these loans into 1982 with the existing guarantee program. They will need a greater guarantee in order to carry the Alaskan-owned companies into 82. So just for those loans that we've already made, the CFAB has already made at 40% guarantee, they were raising those up to 70. But that only affects those guarantees out, and the 50% refers to the $100 million maybe in the future.
Mr. Chairman, based upon current information from the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank on those loans outstanding as of April the 8th, and having gone through every one of the loans and determining their outstanding balance as of April 8th, there would be sufficient amount
in the existing loan guarantee account that was appropriated last year to take those guarantees up to 70% based on the outstanding balance.
Are those loans also simply for a year? As loan guarantee, they were supposed to be, but they need to be extended beyond the year because they are not able to pay it because most of the people involved, or the great number, are in recall right now. And so someplace in here we also extend.
Well, based upon the legislation as it was passed last year, go back to the specific section here. The legislation last year did not address a term for which the guarantee was for. It did not address a term. It simply said you can make a guarantee. The way that a guarantee document was constructed and written was that the guarantee exists as long as the loan is outstanding, or if there's an outstanding amount. If the financial institution, you know, comes to the natural point of calling the loan, at that point the guarantee kicks in until everything is, you know, if they come to the point, well, this is the best we can do. So there was no time limit. What had happened in 1980, and also what has happened with a lot of them in 81, is simply that as a natural course of business, because these were really short-term financing coverage guarantees, they basically term out in less than a year.
In the future, none of them could be more than a year. But currently, some of them could be.
Well, right now, the existing guarantees simply leave it open-ended until the financial institution comes to a final resolution. For instance, if the financial institution elects not to call the loan and not force the loan into default, then the guarantee will exist as long as they don't attempt to do that. If they do elect to call the loan into and there is a loss on default, then the guarantee itself would activate. But there is no ending date on the guarantee itself.
But there will be after this bill passes.
There will be on the 82 program.
Okay, so even this year's limitation on loans does not apply to previous ones. It just applies from here on out. Okay.
As far as I understand it, yes. And administratively, that's practically almost, you know, with those old loans or the old guarantees, that's just about the only way you can do it. I mean, we've already covenanted to that fact based upon the previous language. It would, if we attempted to change those previous guarantee documents and tried to set a time limit, more than likely we would, like if we said it could only be for a year, we would likely force a default situation. There is one other point I'd like to bring up. Based upon the outstanding amount as indicated by the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, and assuming the loan balance and that they did not raise the loans, lend more on whatever was existing on April the 8th of 82. And I would presume that would not take place simply because they're out of that season. And some of these have been paid off. A 70% guarantee would leave some residual of money in the of the $40 million. The total loan balance outstanding, according to the Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank, was $22,900,000. 70% of that, as a base guarantee, would be a maximum of approximately $16 million. $16,030,000. So that there would be some balance left. Now, it couldn't be completely determined until, you know, all the payoffs have taken place. And then on canned salmon, there is far less money under canned salmon. I would suggest that somewhere in this bill, unless I haven't picked it up here, that if money, the old $40 million account lapses on June 30th of 82, at least as I know the current language, if there is some thing here that extends it, then it could be carried forward.
Okay, it was certainly never our intent to have that happen, and I don't have appropriations bill in front of me, but evidently that does take care of that, but we'll make sure that we bring that up when we talk to that bill.
Mr. Chairman, I just wanted to make it, in case there is any other interpretation with the way the language is written, that the most important point being that, and especially for the financial institutions that would be involved, is that for the 1982 program, that the guarantee is a percentage of the sum in default, okay? Which means that, again, if you have a $10 million loan, the maximum loan at some time was $10 million, and you paid it down to $1 million left, that $500,000 would be covered, and a $500,000 loss is suffered by the financial institution. That's the way it would be interpreted, based upon the language here, just so that we're clear. We have had discussions with Commercial Fishing and Agriculture Bank and a number of other people, and when these are really revolving lines of credit that go up and down all the way throughout the year, and that's just about the only way you can effectively write it and maintain any type of control with the minimum of administration involved. Even with the maximum of administration involved, it would be difficult the other way. I would say that that is as much as I have to say in terms of interpretation. If you have any questions, please, I will stick around.
Representative Halpern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line 21, page 1, the powers and duties of the commissioner. The commissioner may designate agents, adopt regulations, make executive and execute contracts requiring a loan guarantee or a real or personal property. Why does that say may instead of shall?
Simply because it's indeterminate now exactly how far we go. If you say shall, then there is an automatic criterion with the word shall that we have to go out there, we have to set rigid regulations, we have to do that. It may be possible that we may be able to get through this thing without putting in any regulations and going through the regulation process. This simply allows it if it's necessary. Okay. In case, you know, allows it if it's necessary, especially where you might come into a situation where, and a simple example is from last year, there might come up an interpretation problem. If you don't at least allow regulations, you know, then more than likely, if there is any confusion whatsoever as to interpretation on the bill, you practically force one into the most conservative mode in terms of interpretation. If, for instance, somewhere along the line here there is an interpretation problem, then the regulatory process could be used to at least put that up to public comment if there's a significant question. Okay. But if you put in the word shall, we would be forced to write this in terms, we would be forced to go to regulations, and I don't think we would desire the flexibility, but we wouldn't want to be forced to do that because, quite frankly, if we can get away without using regulations, fine.
Well, the only concern I had was in 4 and 5, require the loan guarantee fund be secured by collateral and acquire real or personal property to protect the interest in the fund. It would seem that those two things have a more mandatory nature than just simply adopting regulations.
I think it provides good direction because it says, for instance, require that the loan guaranteed by the fund be secured by collateral. It would be, but this is something that it says we've got to have some collateral for this thing. If you leave 4 off of there, I mean, we literally would have the ability not to accept collateral. You know, just leave them as open-ended loans.
I think, aren't you referring to the may or the shall? You want to make sure that the shall is not 4 or 5.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I agree. I think if you want to put in a may, the may should go to the extent of
1, 2, and 3,
and a shall, of course, could be 4 and 5. I think 5 might be one to be left in a may mode. I think 5 would be acquire real or personal property by purchase, transfer, or foreclosure when the acquisition is necessary to protect the interest should be left in a may mode. The shall could go to the, I think should probably go on to the require that the loan be guaranteed, the loan be secured by collateral. So 4 should be a shall.
but I think 1, 2, 3, and 5 could come into a May.
Just a question on 5. I don't think I understand your reasoning as to why 5 should be a May instead of a shall.
Mr. Chair, off the top of my head, the reason I'm saying is that we may be in a position where it just might be that the collateral is good, but there isn't any real or personal property. Okay, and this also leads into personal property by purchase, transfer, or foreclosure, and those items might not be available and could exclude us if we don't have both conditions satisfied.
Could very well wind up where we have collateral that is, you know, the fish, so to speak, or the accounts receivable and so forth. But there might not be real or personal property available. More than likely, we'll have both 4 and 5. If you want to put in both, we can. I just am not sure that 5 would always be there. I know that 4 will always be there, but I'm not sure about 5.
Okay. Unless there's other questions, because answer Mike, are you going to be around?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so we got quite a few people to testify. So, Rick, did you want to come up and speak to the bill?
The terms of the bill, I'm generally in agreement with the changes. Some of the numbers might require some checking as far as, I better identify myself, so Rick Lauber, representing Pacific Seafood Processors Association. The numbers are somewhat different than I had seen previously. One of them is the 20% that would be set aside for loan guarantees to Alaskan resident-owned companies. If that is adequate to give them coverage, I have no objection to it. It's just that I thought it might be a little bit higher, and particularly since the money would be released on July 1, which is really before there would be a major payout in the season, that it could be increased from 20 to say 30%.
Rick, as you go along here, I might just kind of answer how we got to 20 versus 30. It was the fact that if we'd reduced the guarantee on the 81 to 70 from 90, that therefore you would be releasing money at that point there that could be used for.
Oh, okay.
All right. Also, we figured that where else did you figure? Why would you?
That money is, of course, restricted to that resident-owned company. Yeah, I see. Okay.
But also that hold on a second. I got to convince myself that I was back there. Oh, it doesn't preclude any banks from going into the other account too, as well. I mean, you know, at the same time, if there's not sufficient money here, it doesn't mean they have to draw simply on that account that will be specified for Alaskan-owned banks. And talking with NBA and with CFAB, it seemed like that was sufficient. And to the date that was allowed there, NBA said that they would know within a week to 10 days after this program was in place exactly who they were going to make their loans to. And I suspect that they would have those I guess they would be calling basically a line of credit up to whatever they would want at that point, telling Revenue that we are going to encumber this amount, and that would, in essence, allow them to draw on that line of credit. They will know what that in that short a period of time. We also do not want, as we talked about a number of times, allowing the 20% or 30% to just sit there and at the end of the season it's, there's still a part of there that you wanted that to then revolve fall into the...
All right, that seemed to take care of that question that I had. The apparently the problem of larger companies taking all the money is not as significant a problem as maybe at first I thought. In talking with the people the way it would work, there might be a line of credit issued by a bank, but that does not mean that those lines of credit are not varied during the season, increased or decreased, and that there could be allocations made so that a line of credit of a company could be increased or decreased. And that then brings us to the issue of the limit. We had working with the 35% factor, the limit would then have been a maximum loan of $28 million, which would have been guaranteed by the state to 35%. Now my understanding would be if we guarantee the loan to 50%, no interest, and the maximum guarantee would be $10 million, that would mean the maximum loan that a company could receive would be $20 million, or $8 million less than original. The testimony had on those figures, there would be some companies that would draw down in the neighborhood of that amount. They are probably holding, in other words, these loans would take care of inventory that is presently being held. That inventory, say, is being financed by Rainier or CFirst or NB of A or something. They would get some loan from them, and they would need a loan from the state. It may be they're holding, what if they're holding $25 million worth of inventory that they couldn't get additional loans on? Now they want to go out and buy fish, but they're limited to a maximum amount of $20 million. It may not be a problem, but I suspect there are some companies, and actually several of them, that might be able to use more. I'm not advocating in any stretch of the word that the big companies gobble it up so the little companies don't get it. In fact, I was the one that suggested that 30% be set aside for Alaskan-owned companies. But by the same token, I don't want it to work out where the smaller companies end up with money, and then we have several large companies who would like to be buying fish and processing it, but they can't get the loan, yet the money is in the fund, but we can't get it to them. That's maybe a minor problem that we could work out later on, but it's one reservation I have. Other than that, I don't think that I have any other questions, and generally would favor the legislation.
Thank you. Any questions for members? I guess this takes, this is, of course, repeals the entire thing last year. For some reason last year, and I wasn't in on the original deal, was that the loans, it does say, even last year in the current law, that the loan should only be for a period of a year, with a couple of exceptions. And the exception, portion of the exception states that if the department is a participant in the loan of the fish processor that has not been or appears unlikely to be fully paid within 1 year, term prescribed in A2, the department may not participate in another loan to the processor until the outstanding loan processor has been paid. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that we completely are repealing this and that these new loans will be able to be paid to those other processors who have not. What was the reason for that last year and why the law changed this year?
Well, that's the revolving loan fund, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I believe they're looking at the revolving loan fund, which never went into.
I can answer the question why it was put in there, I think. If you'd like to know, there was a fear that a processor would in effect not pay off the loan, have it at a, well, not a, an extremely low rate, it might be a more attractive rate than could be obtained on the open market, and would in effect just keep rolling over that loan every year, and in effect not paying it off. That was the reason for it. They wanted you to pay it off and then start over again, that idea. So,
and now that appears to be
but there was no money put in the revolving loan fund. That was presumably if there's money, we created a revolving loan fund and we put money in the revolving loan fund, not the loan guarantee fund, but revolving loan fund, that would be up for consideration as to whether or not they wanted to do that. But I can see that you might want to have some mechanism to make people pay off their loans and not just keep rolling them over, paying off other loans that have a less attractive interest rate or something like that. But that's not an issue in this bill.
The money that we're increasing to 70% on the previous loans, we're not affected by this qualification. No, because that particular qualification was not in there, but there was an intent of the original where that money came from, that there would be paid back in the year, but the Department of Revenue has the ability to extend those laws, to extend those loans beyond 1 year. It's never been anybody's intent to have them go longer than a year. But that's the reason. In the new legislation with the guarantees, that would not be the case. There would be no way to be able to guarantee.
Well, not according to the term loan does not exceed 1 year, page 2, line 10. And I suspect that it says that. And if they default, the state either calls the loans or the bank calls the loans in the end after 1 year, or some arrangements are made, but it is not the intent to extend it beyond 1 year, especially since it's the immediate account. I mean, I don't think there's going to be anybody that's going to be, including myself, that's going to be very partial to that over 1 year.
I don't know if this would happen, but one of the things we have or should keep in mind is that we're not actually extending any money. The banks are extending the money. There would be nothing that I could see that would keep the bank if a loan was paid down or for some reason a portion was remaining on the due date when this bill would expire. What in effect would be is at that point that the guarantee is going to expire. The bank would have the option of either calling the loan, making the person forfeit, taking the security and going through sale and whatever to recover their loss, or if they felt that it was a good loan, they would just merely let the time expire and the bank or CFAB or whatever would merely pick up the balance of the loan. For all the normal lending practices, there is no guarantee. A bank and a seafood processor merely reach an agreement. The guarantee is the collateral, and whether it's accounts receivable or the salmon or whatever it is, that's put up as collateral. And if the salmon was still there and it was they had value or they could come up with other collateral, the loan could be extended. It's just the state would not be guaranteeing the loan after the first of the year had passed.
Okay. No other questions. Roger, do you want to? Thank you.
I'll be here.
I'm
going to
For the record, my name is Roger Painter, and I'm representing United Fishermen of Alaska. I would like to speak in favor of this bill and just point out a couple of the important provisions, I guess. One thing I think is that's real crucial in this bill, that is, it also goes to pay cover for the costs that are associated with the recall. And particularly when you look at that portion, and then on page 4, section 6, that talks about covering the 1981 pack, I think this is a very significant action toward helping with the recall cost. The companies that have been hit by the recall, of the 6 companies that are involved in the recall, Salmon, 4 of them are owned by a majority of the resident-owned stockholders. And the other 2 companies are fairly large companies. One of them is owned by the Japanese, 98%. And the other company is a very old family-owned company that is very well backed. One of the principal owners is a majority stockholder in National Bank of Alaska and First National Bank of Ketchikan. I think those 2 companies do have very significant backing. It is those Alaska-owned companies that there is a real big concern with as far as the impact of the recall. So I think that's something to really keep in mind, and it is the reason why there's a 70% guarantee for the 1981 loans. One question that's been put to me in the process so far is what are the fishermen doing in this in regards to this situation? And the best answer I could get is is that in the process of negotiating fish prices, most of the fishermen's groups seem to be working arrangements that would call for the processors to provide less money up front for the fish. And so the fishermen, in effect, would be financing a portion of the pack that the processors traditionally have
had to finance. So they are doing something to help with this financing crunch. Just one other point I'd like to make is that I was requested by one of my member groups to really bring out the need, a couple of the member organizations actually, really bring out the need to help the small guy, and particularly the resident-owned companies that are involved. And one situation I'd like to use as an illustration is a cannery in Mountain Village, which is located on the Yukon River. The Mountain Village cannery is owned by the Village Corporation in that area. That cannery is also freezes fish. They service they're the exclusive buyer on about 100 miles of the Yukon River and service from 200 to 300 fishermen. In addition, all the employees of that outfit are local residents. The cannery has been dropped by its bank. They were dealing with SeaFirst, I believe. They've been informed that they better go to CFAB to get financing for their 1982 pack. This, the Mountain Village cannery is very much dependent on
There are representatives of cannery and called Diamond E, which is located in Bristol Bay. I think they'll bring a very similar story before you shortly. Another cannery I'd like to point out that's in a very critical financial state right now is Chugach Alaska Fisheries, located in Prince William Sound. They are under recall, and if this bill does not pass, I've been informed it is highly likely they will not operate in 1982. And right now...
Let me interrupt you and ask you what the recall was on Mountain Village.
There's no recall in Mountain Village. No recall whatsoever. And they have sold their pack, as I understand it. Nonetheless, their bank has informed them that they can no longer finance them.
Why would this do that? And then if they haven't been able to pay the bill in a year and they're not impacted by the recall, why would a guarantee for a year change their profit outlook and make it a banking institution?
The only place they have to turn, as I understand, is CFIP. I don't know what CFAB's reaction has been to their loan application. The information I get from CFAB regarding most of the resident-owned processing companies that they are servicing is that without the guarantees, they're probably going to be unable to finance. And part of the reason is they deal with, they get almost all their money from the... Okay. Rick, I guess, has a specific answer about Mountain Village, if that would help.
Sure. Mountain Village, the key part was they have not sold their pack. The can pack is a substantial part of it is in inventory. About 70% of it is in inventory. And they have sold their frozen pack. What has happened to them is that the bank is willing to go along with financing last year's pack. In other words, they're guaranteeing, the pack. But they will not apparently extend them credit to purchase fish in the 1982 season. They're willing to go along with them holding the canned salmon pack, but they won't go along with them for the future pack. And I think CFAB is going to, if we can get a guarantee program for them. That's why they were cut loose. They haven't been completely cut loose. In other words, the bank is still financing that pack. And quite frankly, what has happened, I think, is that the value of the pack, because of the botulism thing, there's been a decrease in value, has dropped to the point that it's probably about where it was when they loaned them the money. So their line of credit for canned salmon is virtually taken up. So if they want to go into a future pack in 1982, they need additional funds, and their own bank has said they won't do that. That's assuming they don't get a guarantee. Maybe if they get a guarantee, they would do it, but CFAB probably will.
One of the things to understand about it is like the people dealing with fish companies, they're rolling over a lot, a large amount of money relative to the value of the company. So if the price drops dramatically, and right now, who's to say what canned salmon is worth? And if you're a banker, you're supposed to be a very conservative person, and it's hard to say. Nobody's really selling a whole lot of canned salmon right now, and so people probably speculate pretty conservative values on what it might be worth. But so that the paper value of your company can shift like that. It's like all of a sudden you read the stock market, the value of your stock dropped, but you still own all the same assets, business is still worrying along, but suddenly your balance sheet has totally changed. And that's the sense what's happened to a lot of these companies, because they may purchase many times the net worth of their company. So even a small shift in the or in this case a dramatic shift in the value of the product, could suddenly make their company, if they don't sell all that, look like it's not worth anything, even though yesterday they were, you know, a company of substantial net worth. And so that's why when the bank looks at it, suddenly now they say, you're not a good credit risk. All of a sudden, because if you ran a balance sheet, it looks a lot different than it did 2 months ago.
I guess I can see that. It would seem to me that you would still not necessarily be a good credit risk, even with a guaranteed loan, if the banking institution didn't feel that after a year, when the guarantee lapsed, you know, that you would be in a different situation. Or at least I don't understand that. I don't understand why.
We're not assuming that CFAB is going to lend to these people. They're going to put them through the same scrutiny that everybody else is. But the simple fact that we're putting this guarantee up does not guarantee that anybody will pick them up. It's just that they're going to have substantive, proof that they are going to be able to make it, because the banks are still going to have a great deal of money out there that they'll have at risk. So I don't think that, I think Roger and Rick are speaking to Mountain Village as an example that could benefit from this program, but they're still going to have to go through CFAB.
It could, but it may not.
It may not. I have no idea.
And just one final point here, I guess. The estimates and very, very, very much guesses, educated guesses, I guess you could call them, is that roughly half of the 1981 pack is going to be sitting in the warehouses through the 1982 season. That translates to about 2 million cases of salmon. And that's one of the reasons, and that all that pack that's being carried over is tying up the finances and, that normally would be available to finance the 1982 pack. And that's one of the reasons why there's the need for the guarantee program, in order to loosen up other monies that normally would not be available for PAC loans. And that's it.
Thank you. If you want Rogers here, and you know, I think Natalia would understand overall, I really don't understand a lot. So this may seem like a silly question. If the portion is very speculative, what's going to happen to the price of salmon in the can or to fishermen in 1982? And if we have half of 1981's pack left, you know, the old basic laws of supply and demand suggest that we have a hell of a lot bigger supply than we have demand, therefore the prices are going to go down. And yet what we're aiming at here, as I understand it, is a way to encourage the processing of all the fish that are caught, or to ensure that in fact that there be an oversupply. And I just not sure I understand from an economic standpoint how that's beneficial to the processors or to the fishermen or to the state.
The one important feature about this bill and very dramatic difference between this bill and the version that's being kicked around the House, I mean the Senate, is that this covers all forms of salmon products, fresh, frozen, and canned. And we're assuming, and all the indications we get from the way that the industry is gearing up for the 82 season, that there's going to be a fairly dramatic shift towards fresh and frozen product. And there's been a lot of opportunity out there for a long time in the fresh and frozen market, but the industry hasn't really been forced to jump out there and exploit it the way they're going to be this next year. And we think that a lot of this fish that would normally go into a can will be absorbed by new markets in fresh and frozen salmon. And again, that's a very, very crucial, important, crucial factor of this bill, that it's not covering just canned pack, but fresh and frozen as well. And, but you're right in terms of price, both to the fisherman and to the processor, they're likely to go down. And although that may be a little painful in the short term, the long-term benefits of that may be good. If the price of canned salmon goes down, it's likely that we're going to attract more consumers, new consumers, and that when this botulism thing disappears, we will have more potential customers than we had before.
Where's the break even point for a processor? Well, is there some set price on a can that below that you don't process cans anymore?
I'm not exactly sure if that kind of figure exists, and I'm certainly not the one to be qualified to answer that. I do know some things about price of fish and some of the prices that the processors are offering now. And in order for a fisherman to make a profit with the kind of prices that are being discussed, that means more volume is going to have to be cranked through, and thus the need to have the financing for the processors to be able to handle it more.
I'm getting an inconsistency. In other words, we want more volume, already knowing that we have too much. So.
No, I think you're right in that there's a very troubled market for canned, but all the information on the frozen market is that it's steadily increasing. It's been going up by about 10% every year. We think there's a lot of opportunity out there to take advantage of, and that the increase this next year could be much greater than the 10% we've seen year after year, and that a lot of that fish can be absorbed on those markets. And we're not saying rely only on those canned markets or the fresh and frozen markets we've been catering to in the last few years. Because if we did that, there would be a serious problem. We got to expand the marketing horizons.
Well, but you're at least saying to those processors who are geared up to can, we need to provide them with the finances to come up with a minimum pack that they need to cover their operating expenses and their canneries.
But they're not. This program does not force anybody to do anything. It simply is there for if the processor decides that. If there is a break-even point, if it's below that, he's obviously not going to process, therefore he won't need a loan. The market determinations that he makes will determine whether or not he even involves himself in this program. So if there's a glut on the market and he says that I can't sell a fresh, I can't sell a frozen, I can't sell a can, I'm not going to operate, this bill is nothing for him, and that operator does not operate.
Except the market determinations are altered by the fact that no longer will the bank who just canceled somebody else consider it in a normal free market situation. They will take this and say, well, since the bank is guaranteeing it, you know, I look at the normal market factors, plus I look at the state guarantee to make my determination. That also makes non-ability.
Well, if you can't help but say that this is going to influence everyone's decision to operate, but I think we're talking about the sort of dollars that one will make some real realistic decisions on whether he goes into it. I mean, there's still going to be, you're talking really big dollars, so that a 50% guarantee still leaves on a loss
not on the front end, but still leaves an awful lot to be shared equally by the bank. So, but yeah, there's, you can't help but alter the situation some. But then, okay, let's, okay then.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I got a marketing question that kind of bothers me. Right now we're thinking about 80 million pinks coming. And we feel that we have, what, about 12 and a half surplus, more than we can domestically process.
That was a very conservative estimate.
And then there's talk about allowing foreign processors to come in. And this, of course, eventually we're all competing on the world market at the same time. Would this not cause a problem with reducing the marketability of the pack that we'll be dealing with?
Now, there's two basic theories about this. One of them is called, we sort of call the black hole theory, and that's the assumption that if we invite in the right country, that market, that salmon won't get out in the market that the U.S. processors are competing with. And it's the reason why we've been trying to negotiate with the Soviet bloc countries who would not be in competition with on the domestic market and the European market. There's another theory that's called a global theory, and there's one global market for salmon, and so much can be cranked into that, one market. We obviously don't subscribe to that theory. We think there are places you could send the salmon that are not going to impact the existing market. And we're concerned about that because that's where we expect our salmon to go this year and next year and the year after and the year after. And we, you know, the foreign processors, you know, everything that we've done in order to encourage this state in the countries has been aimed at protecting those existing markets for the domestic function.
Okay. I've got Ted Evans and Hank Ostrowski. Are there other people that are going to be wanting to testify? Ted, would you like to come up and
my name is Ted Evans. I'm with Diamond D Fisheries. We have a salmon cannery and frozen salmon freezing line in Egagic. We are one of the small companies that has been severely impacted by the recall of 1981 pack. We have almost 100% of our pack sitting in warehouses in Seattle.
I'll take a minute to inform you about the company. We are 100% Alaskan-owned. Salmon is our only product. We've been processing salmon since 1978. Primarily, we've been canning, but we've been doing some freezing as well. And we intend to gear up our freezing line for 1982. We buy salmon primarily from Alaskan fishermen, and we presently have an approximately $7 million 1981 pack loan from CFAB. The note makes the principal and interest due a couple of months from now. Our financial planning, our cash flow, et cetera, has been severely impacted by the inability of us to follow through on the contracts that we had to sell our 1981 pack. And as a result, we find ourselves in a difficult position financially. We support the legislation in its present form. That's with the caveat that there may be some principles or provisions in here that we don't quite understand. We understand that there has been discussion about the numbers, whether 50% of the loss is the appropriate type of guarantee, whether it should be 35% of the loan, et cetera. It's difficult for us to take a position on this, obviously, because in the end, it's going to be CFAB that makes the decision on our loan application. So for those issues, the 50% on the 1982 PAC, the 70% on the 1981 PAC, we would essentially defer to CFAB and hope that they would agree to something that that would support our loan application for 1982. As to the provision for which sets aside essentially 20% of the money for, as I understand it, Alaskan banks and Alaskan-owned companies, once again, we really don't have enough information to support the 20% figure. I guess the 30% figure sounds better to us. We don't want to find ourselves in a position of having to compete with the larger Alaskan-owned companies for these funds. So I guess if we had to take a position on that, we would support the 30% over the 20%. We'd like to emphasize that the provision which provides the 70% loan guarantee extension for the 81 PAC is tremendously important to us, in that we think it allows CFAB to extend the note that we presently have owing to them. If we get a loan for the 1982 PAC, but get no extension on the 1981 PAC loan, I don't see how we can continue to operate. So for our situation, it seems that these two provisions are a package, and both of them are necessary. As for markets, well, we are gearing up to do freezing. We think we have markets for it. Hopefully the depression in the canned salmon market is only temporary, and by the end of the loan guarantee period for 1982, we will have successfully marketed the 1981 PAC. It's difficult to know at this time. Everything is really in limbo. We're not getting good information from FDA as to what the standards will be for ultimately marketing this product. Finally, I'd like to point out that for us, time is of the essence. We're having difficulty with our cash flow. We're trying to gear up for the season. We're trying to buy supplies and equipment to ship north. And our creditors are asking us what's going to happen on our loan. And we can only reply, we don't know. It's in the legislature. We have our loan application in the CFAB, but they cannot act on it yet. That's in essence my testimony.
Well, we spent a great deal of time on this bill, and we're hoping that it's going to do, you know, what is needed to help you, you know, the companies such as yourself out. Once again, now all we're doing is putting legislation in place and hopefully funding it, and the decision will be up to CFAB. We know that it's difficult for a processor to say exactly what they needed, you know, and work the numbers back and forth. We've been kind of working on our own, the legislature has, without a great deal of guidance from the processors, and I would hope that before this bill is, if it is enacted, that if there are real serious mistakes, that they can be pointed out to us, because it's not our intent to do anything but that which will help the industry the most. So, like I said, it's been a lot of it. It's been on our backs, and so I would just hope that if you have an opportunity to look at it, and it's not exactly what it might take to help the majority of the processors, and you might still have time to affect this legislation. Terry?
Yeah. From the perspective of, you know, I think we've been working on trying to figure out what could be done by the state to sort of keep the industry whole and keep it operating. But on the other hand, I think we as legislators have some responsibility to look at what risk is taking the public's money by interfering in the private sector economy. And these companies go broke all the time. I had a letter from a facetious letter from some constituents of mine that said, look, the timber industry's in trouble. Why aren't you giving loan guarantees to the timber industry? It's a pretty good point. How risky is this for the state to be doing this? Do you know, expect you to expose the internal numbers of your company to your competition in public or something, but you know the condition of your company and maybe some of the other companies are in the same position. How much risk is to take the state taking by passing this legislation and assuming loans are made to your company and companies like yourself in the same position? I mean, is this pretty high risk for us to be doing this, or just something that nobody else understands except us? I mean, nobody else is stepping forward to provide guarantees. Is that because they don't understand it, they aren't compassionate, or maybe they're smarter than we are and they're staying away from it for some very good reasons?
Well, speaking for our company, I think, look, we have potentially a very solid and profit-making operation with good access to product and good markets for salmon in the future. I think we find ourselves now faced with an extraordinary situation where through no fault of our own, we are unable to market our product. And it is essentially a cash flow issue. We have a valuable inventory that we simply cannot market in order to gear up for the coming season. And I think the state recognizes this as an extraordinary situation, and hopefully is taking some efforts to help us through it.
Okay, let's assume you get an extension of your loan from CFAB and you get the loan for the 82 season you go out by fish. You're going to have to be able to generate enough cash to make interest, storage, and insurance payments on your 81 pack as well as your 82 pack until you sell that. I mean, can you really see that the numbers are there that you aren't going to have any profit until sometime either you sell some of your 81 pack, which right now you can't tell us when you'll do that. So I would just guess that you're not going to have any cash coming in until sometime in the late summer or fall, maybe from your frozen fish or something. I mean, can you really say that the numbers are there that you're going to be able to not only pay one loan, but you got two loans and two packs that even though we give a guarantee they extend you the money, you still have to pay each month that interest and storage cost?
There's no question that there's some value to the 1981 pack that we have. It may be depressed at this point, but times and attitudes change, and we're optimistic that
going to be restored to its original contract value. I suppose you can envision a scenario where you could never sell that pack. But
no, I'm saying, what do you do in the meantime? Let's assume that happens next November.
What do you do between now and November to generate cash to make your monthly interest payments on the 1981-82 pack? You've got $7 million out to CFAP now, right? I don't know how much you intend to borrow from this coming year. What would you borrow?
It's really not final yet. I don't think it would be that much. It wouldn't be in that amount.
But okay, I mean, you've got the interest payments on that are going to be due for the next 6 months, whether you sell any fish or not. And my question is how are you going to be able to generate the cash to pay for that?
Well, we're going to be selling frozen fish. We have a market for it. I don't have a cash flow analysis here that I can give to you, but we're optimistic that if we're able to operate this summer, that we come out ahead, and that's why we're doing it. And obviously, CFAB is going to make that same evaluation on our pro forma.
What percentage of your purchases this summer will go into fresh or frozen salmon sales?
Well, of our sales, I think we can probably expect 60% to 70%.
As opposed to last year, you had what?
Relatively little frozen.
You just didn't choose to freeze, or you didn't have the capacity? Or
we didn't. We had the capacity, but we didn't operate it for any length of time.
Any other questions?
Kent? In your specific operation, you buy directly from fishermen, or you use a large portion of this money to spend money for other buyers?
I didn't hear the latter part.
In your operation yourself, do you buy directly from fishermen that come in and sell directly to you, or do you use a lot of this money for other buyers? Do you give this as money for other buyers to buy fish for you?
I'm not sure. My understanding is that we buy directly from fishermen, but I'm not absolutely certain of that. I haven't been with the company four fishing seasons, so I'm just not sure.
Thank you, Ed.
Thank you.
Hey. Yeah. But, Norm, you want to touch the
subject? Okay. Mr. Chairman, my name is Hank Ostrowski. I'm a commercial fisherman from Bristol Bay. I fish commercial in Bristol Bay. And I've reviewed this bill and a previous work drafts that you've had. And the main drawback on this bill that prevents it from becoming a prudent investment on the part of the state is a lack of a quality assurance program that would guarantee the quality. There are now internationally recognized quality assurance groups that could be, I think, enticed to guarantee quality of the raw fish to the processor, and then further guaranteeing the quality from the processor into the bonded warehouse at a very minimal cost. And this would then give to the state a mechanism not to make a loan guarantee, but a direct loan in which the fish could then be mortgaged by the state up to 70% of its wholesale value, and thereby taking care of all the processing costs, the initial cost of the operating for the fishermen, the processing costs, the transportation to bonded warehouses, where there then could be picked up by a legitimate type of factoring international factoring system such as Heller Associates at about 2% that would guarantee the quality and the delivery to the distributor warehouse internationally, and thereby guaranteeing to the consumer or the agents of the consumer a quality bonded product. Since the minimal amount of title transfers would occur, what you would have there is that the state could then bond for title from the fisherman. This is with the original intent, I think, of CFAB, but the certain restrictions in the Alaskan law prevented this from occurring, and as a result, CFAB collateralizes its loans through capital equipment and through licenses, et cetera. Now, I've looked through this bill here, and I've made several revisions, and with the tolerance and of the committee here, I would, for their perusal, I would change on that line 6, product loan guarantees.
Strike guarantees and make it fisheries product loan. And any place where you see loan guarantee, like on line 10, strike that guarantee and call it a fisherman revolving loan fund. And then establishment of the fund and revolving loan guarantees on guarantees, strike that on 12. And then on fisheries, the line 13, change that from product guarantees, strike guarantees, and make it product loans. And the department may use money in the fund to strike guarantee from guarantee to the made, and insert to an Alaskan licensed fish producers in Alaska. And then on line 16, strike purchase and finance the processing of fisheries products from Alaskan fisheries. And then I would add language, by mortgaging 70% of the wholesale value upon quality assurance of raw and processed product by an internationally recognized bonding agent. And this would give,
I'm sure you got three or four, but you're going to have to at least get me in tune with what you're doing before we even go any further.
Oh, okay.
You're suggesting that we give the loans to fishermen?
Yes.
How does that provide the processor with the money to buy the fish from the fishermen?
Well, see, you get 70% of the wholesale value, and then the fisherman could contract either by joint venture to the processor or to the processor strictly as a bailee, in which he would guarantee through the state and suitable agents the processing cost to the processor, since we're interested in actually getting this year's pack.
The fisherman would guarantee to the processor that the processor would have enough money to buy the fish from the fisherman?
Well, you don't. The title isn't transferred. The processor is strictly processing the fish and getting the cost for processing the fish. And the inventory off the process would be held jointly by the state and the fisherman into the bonded warehouse with assured quality. This would be a prudent investment on the part of the state, and you probably wouldn't even have to go to a product loan. You could probably go to the permanent fund, and since the permanent fund is involved in prudent investments with a quality assurance by an internationally recognized corporation, this would be a very prudent investment on the part of the state. And since it seems like there's a massive transfer from canned salmon into fresh and fresh frozen, and it looks like there's some manipulations in the international markets to push out canned salmon. And since there's no danger of botulism in, say, fresh and fresh frozen, what you're looking at, I think, is a massive shift in markets from canned to frozen. And it looks like somebody's trying to stick the state with a hell of a bill and buying up all the canned salmon that it can. And then the money would probably be used in this product loan guarantees for the
processing of fresh and fresh frozen. That seems to be the trend. And since there's, on one can of salmon that has botulism, you're closing down the whole West Coast, there seems to be other forces involved in this, and I would say that would be a very prudent investment on the part of the state to purchase its own product on a quality assurance and then hold it for the markets. And I think that what will happen is the markets will break over any cartel manipulation and be of benefit directly to the legitimate processors and the legitimate producers in the state of Alaska.
I
revised most of this.
Am I missing something? Am I the only person here missing? Can somebody else explain to me in terms besides Hank's?
Well, Hank is, you know, has got problems with the bill, and you know, he's just simply structuring the bill the way he would want to see it. So I mean, I'm not totally in tune with what he's saying either, but he's just speaking to the bill the way he would want to see it.
Mr. Chairman, I do not have a problem with the bill if it's revised so that we could actually protect the state's investment and the fishermen's investment in the fish so that it would be guaranteed the max amount of capital gains back to the citizens of the state for financing this and to the producers, legitimate producers and processors. But the way this is, the way the bill is structured, there's so many different convolutions in here as far as loan guarantees, and a lot of the money that's going into the guarantees will be going out to outside banks and to outside or foreign markets people. And then what you're looking at is not a processor's bill, but what you're looking at is a fish buyer's bill. And the fish buyer who's going to end up with a title is I would say, 97% owned by foreign interests, specifically Japan. And I would say that the that any loans in this manner would go to insulate the markets of Alaskan from the